Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Lenny.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Dr. Aisha Akhtar, a double board certified neurologist, preventative medicine and public health specialist, and author of the book Animals and Public Health, Why Treating Animals Better is Critical to Human Welfare. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
The University of British Columbia reports on a new study at fies.org that industrial fishing fleets have doubled the distance they travel to fishing grounds since 1950, but only catch a third of what they did 65 years ago per kilometer traveled. Researchers from Sea Around Us Initiative at the University of Western Australia and the University of British Columbia mapped the growth and spread of industrial fisheries since 1950 and found that global trends were dominated by the heavily subsidized fleets of small numbers of countries, increasing the total area fished from 60% to 90% of the world's oceans. Lead author of the research, Dr. David Tickler, notes that while most countries continue to focus their fishing efforts on local waters, Taiwan, South Korea, Spain, and China have aggressively subsidized vehicle and fuel costs to encourage their fleets to operate thousands of kilometers from their home ports.
According to a report which was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, humans have destroyed 83% of all mammals and half of all the plants on Earth. The weight of the 7.5 billion humans on the planet makes up only 0.01% of all its biomass. Despite it being such a small part of Earth, humanity has been steadily destroying everything else that is on the planet for the last few millennia. Of all the birds which are left on the planet, about 70% are poultry chickens and other farmed birds. Out of all the mammals that are left in the world, about 60% are cows, 36% are pigs, and a mere 4% are wild mammals. The report also disclosed that marine mammals have plunged by 80% over the past century. Industrial farming, as well as extraction of resources and the expansion of human civilization, is driving the huge imbalance between domestic and wild animals. Other studies have also discovered the decline of animals and plants. For example, scientists have argued that the planet is experiencing its sixth mass wave of extinction as billions of local animal populations are endangered all over the world. The decline is progressing even faster now, and if no action is taken to solve this problem, there could be no wild vertebrates left in less than 20 years.
From Live Kindly, vegan seafood company Good Catch Foods has just secured $8.7 million in a Series A funding round in order to bring its highly anticipated products to market in what is being positioned as a company that will disrupt the global seafood market with plant-based versions of crab and tuna. Good Catch stresses that the world's oceans are in danger. Over 90% of large predatory fish stocks are depleted, and experts have predicted that the global fisheries are expected to collapse before 2050 due to overfishing. Vegan food, meanwhile, is finding favor with more consumers than ever before, though vegan seafood has not yet attracted a large customer base as categories like plant-based meat and non-dairy milk. Oceans currently serve as the world's largest source of protein, leaving the plant-based seafood market open to emerging brands. Co-founded by New Crop Capital, conscious agency Beyond Brands, eco-lifestyle pioneer Marcy Zaroff, and Wicked Healthy chefs Chad and Derek Sarno, Good Catch aims to solve the complex global ocean issues and disrupt the industry through sustainable vegan seafood using new food technology and seafood. The products are also seafood-based, which may further help the brand identify as seafood. The Sarno brothers have been working on several products such as vegan shredded tuna, crab cakes, and fish patties using high-protein ingredients like peas, lentils, chickpeas, and fava beans. Fortunately for the oceans, Good Catch is set to launch its products in the U.S. before 2019. Stay with us. Coming up next, we feature a conversation with Dr. Aisha Akhtar, a double-board-certified neurologist, preventative medicine and public health specialist, and author of the book Animals and Public Health, Why Treating Animals Better is Critical to Human Welfare, which examines how the treatment of animals impacts human health. Dr. Akhtar is Deputy Director of the Army Traumatic Brain Injury Program and Fellow for the Oxford Center for Animal Ethics. She serves as Lieutenant Commander in the U.S. Public Health Service Commissioned Corps to protect the public from public health threats. Stick around. That's next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Aisha Akhtar. Thanks for being with us, Aisha.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, Aisha. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how you got involved in a plant-based diet and veganism?
Sure. Well, it started when I was a child, in a sense. It was a bit of a journey. I went through some personal turmoil. I was sexually abused by an uncle when I was a young girl. And my grandparents at around the same time had adopted a dog who I just fell absolutely in love with. His name was Sylvester. And we became the best of friends, as I know many people have that type of story. But what was unique about the story is Sylvester was also abused in a different way, but he was also abused. And my deep love and empathy for Sylvester eventually caused me to speak out against his abuse. And then that gave me the courage to speak out and end my own abuse. And so that empathy I developed with Sylvester then fed into empathy for all other animals as I started to grow up. And that story I just gave you is the subject of an upcoming book of mine as well. And so as I was growing as a child, I just developed this deep passion and empathy for all animals, although I continued to eat animals and never thought about the animals I ate. But it wasn't until I was in high school, and I was a pre-med student at the time. I knew I wanted to be a doctor because I cared about ending suffering. And when I was in high school, I kind of accidentally came upon some information about what was going on. There was this one story about this mother cow, what they call a downed cow, her story and what she faced and the suffering and abuse she faced in for food production. And that just completely opened up my eyes. It was something that I read, my mother read. We passed it to one sister and then to the other sister. And then that same night after we all read the story, my mother came down to the kitchen and announced to the family, "I'm no longer serving meat in the house." And we all just agreed. The family agreed. And because we got it, we got that connection, we started to see that cruelty and abuse of anyone can lead to cruelty and abuse to everyone. And we just having our own cats as well, we started to realize what's the difference between our cats or our dogs, like Sylvester, who I love so deeply, and a pig and a cow and a chicken or a turkey. And so we made that connection on a very emotional level as well as on a very ethical level in the sense that we saw the connection between how we treat other animals and how we treat other human beings.
Yeah, and we're seeing, you know, also the utilization of animals in therapy, formal therapy ways, you know, in for PTSD animals, for, you know, helping kids learn how to read, or, you know, they use them in courtrooms to help, you know, soothe someone, you know, for a child, for instance, trying to give a testimony about a particular issue. So it's really, I think people are really starting to make that bridge. And I understood that as a kid too. You had a unjudgmental cat or dog nearby who just made you feel better and made you healthier. And studies have shown that actually animals do tend to make people healthier, which is probably a good segue. You wrote the book Animals and Public Health, Why Treating Animals Better is Critical to Human Welfare. Maybe we can talk a little bit about how, what your experience was in medical school and what brought you to this point to write the book.
Sure. So, as I was in high school, I started to learn more and more about the animal protection and animal rights and how we treat animals and how that's connected with so many other larger social movements, such as women's rights and civil rights, gender rights, and so on. And that just increased that, I guess, that matured as I matured as well. And by the time I entered medical school, I was, at that time, I think the idea of a doctor being a vegan or a medical student being vegan was still so controversial and radical at the idea. And I was kind of like singled out as the very radical one among my whole medical school class. And I started to question at that time the use of animals in animal experimentation as I started to question not only on an ethical basis, why are we doing these things to animals who are so capable of suffering and so capable of experiencing pleasure? And yet, as physicians, as research scientists, we ignore that issue conveniently. We ignore that ethical component of it altogether. So I was really questioning the ethical aspect of it, but I was also questioning the scientific aspect and in a sense the ethical aspect as it pertains to humans. Because as I started learning more and I started researching the issue, I realized that animal experimentation is not very good for humans either. And it's something that the scientific community has just started to develop kind of just because it was there, right? Animals were easy to use, so that's what we use. And then it became more of a habit. And yet, as we started, more and more recent scientific studies have shown that, animal experimentation are very poor at telling us what we're going to find in humans. And so they don't mimic human physiology. They're not good surrogates for human physiology. And the best way to study human physiology, human biology, and to find the best medicines and cures for our diseases is to study human biology. And more scientists now. So when I was a medical school student, that was very radical at the time, too. And that was about, 25 years ago. Nowadays, it's not so radical anymore. As a matter of fact, it's become widely acknowledged in the medical and the scientific community that animal experimentation is a very, very, as a whole, is a very poor predictor of human biology. So, but at the time when I started to think about these things, about animal testing, about how that links with human health as well, because it's not the best way to study human health, I started to think about our diets and how eating animals is not the best thing for our health, not only on a personal health level in regards to diseases like stroke and heart attacks and diabetes and cancers, but also in regards to the environmental impacts and climate change impact that animal agriculture health has and how that feeds into our health as well. So the idea came that, there is no other book that really explores all these issues and really looks at how the way we treat animals impacts our own well-being. So that's how the book came about. And so it covers a wide range of issues. It looks at animal agriculture. It looks at animal experimentation. And it looks at things like the link between abuse of animals and other forms of abuse, especially domestic violence and other forms of family violence.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering maybe if we can, just to focus in on one of those topics, we often don't talk about animal experimentation on the show, and I'm wondering if maybe you could just paint a little bit of a portrait of how often is animal testing used now? How frequently is it in the U.S.? Is it mostly done elsewhere? And, what kind of products and, are we, in terms of a percentage, do you think, is it cosmetics and versus trying to figure out drugs, for treatment?
Sure. Well, In the U.S., there is no law that says, there's no regulation that demands animal testing on household products and cosmetics. Nevertheless, many products still continue to be tested on animals. Many of those products still continue to be tested on animals by companies who are sort of wedded to the use of animals in testing. And now that a lot of research has been outsourced to other countries like India and China, especially China, where China has actually demanded, has made it a necessity that household products and cosmetic testing have to be tested on animals. And so companies like L'Oreal and other large companies like that don't have to have those products tested on animals to sell in the U.S., but because they're outsourcing them and also trying to sell them in places like China, which mandate animal testing, these companies are still testing these products on animals. So people, unfortunately, we might buy a product that says not tested on animals, but there's more to the story than that. They may not be tested on animals in the U.S. by that company, but they are being tested on animals under the name of that company in other countries.
Or it might not just be the product that's tested, but all the ingredients or many of the ingredients that make up the product are tested.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. And so that's one form of testing that's done on animals, and that's something that consumers right away could start more and more with their dollars having a direct impact on. The main bulk of animal testing that most people think about is what's done under medical research, under the term medical research, to learn about basic human biology and to learn about human diseases and to find drugs and other types of treatments for human diseases. Now, I worked at the Food and Drug Administration for a decade, and unfortunately the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, is also very wedded to animal testing. So even though many companies nowadays realize that animal testing is not the best way to go, and it's definitely not the most efficient way for them to do their testing, these companies are still testing on animals because the FDA is demanding it. So there's a sort of a disconnect there, in the sense that private companies and I would say more forward-thinking people in the private sector are trying to move away from animal testing. But then you have our governmental regulatory agencies like the Food and Drug Administration, which is kind of a blockage there. These are folks who are so used to animal experimentation. That is what they know. That is what they're comfortable with. And because of that, they're not moving forward as they should.
Right. And, you know, a good portion of your book is devoted to you know, major public health threats. And people, I don't think, make the connection between factory farming and public health threats. Why are those two issues interrelated?
Gosh, you know, and it's just starting to come out, but we're going to see more and more of that, I think, in the news, that connection between animal agriculture and public health threats. And so we can think about how animal agriculture is connected with public health in three main ways. One, in that eating animals and their products, their eggs and their dairy products, these are products that are high in saturated fats, they're high in carcinogens, and they are having a direct impact in dramatically increasing the rates of diabetes, heart disease, stroke, and many, many forms of cancer. And these chronic diseases are the main causes of diseases and death, not only in the United States and the rest of the so-called developed world, but also in the countries we normally think of as normally being malnourished, like in India and in many parts of Africa. Rather than having diseases of malnourishment, we're now seeing that the top diseases in those areas are diseases of overnourishment or too much reliance on these products that come from animals. So in that sense, animal products are real, truly a true public health threat.
And then we should also mention food poisoning. When the FDA itself recommends that you wash your cutting board with bleach after cutting up a chicken, that's not, you know, something that I would want to eat.
Exactly. And that's a perfect example of what leads into the second connection between animal agriculture and public health. So animal agriculture, because of factory farming, you are squeezing these lives, these animals, into smaller and smaller spaces. They're cramped. They're miserable. I visited these farms here in Oklahoma personally just a few years ago. These animals are miserable. They're living in filthy conditions. They're so stressed. They're so distressed. And all of that raises or increases their risk of catching infectious diseases and spreading it on to each other. And so these factory farms are like incubators for viruses and bacteria. And so it's very easy for one pathogen to pass from one animal to another like wildfire and spread like wildfire. And then eventually those pathogens, those viruses, those bacteria come back to us, either when we eat them, and that causes food poisoning, as you mentioned, or foodborne illnesses, or indirectly in the form of pandemics and epidemics. So one of the biggest threats we're going to see in the upcoming years is the rapid increase in the number of influenza viruses that can be incredibly dangerous and deadly to our health. And we're already starting to see that. We're starting to see rapid mutations in the influenza virus, in the swine flu virus, in the bird flu virus. And these are leaving the factory farm. They're being transferred from the animals then onto the factory farm workers and onto their families and then onto the larger community. And because these viruses are airborne, they spread rapidly. They can get around the globe in a matter of weeks. And so this is a major, major public health threat. And it's only a matter of time before we start to see the repercussions of how we're treating animals and start to see these pandemics.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of sort of sad and scary concerns for us as a human race. We've got climate change and the chronic diseases, these Ebola and flu viruses, things like that, and the infectious diseases that we're facing through factory farms. But you have a great TED Talk, and in the end, you said that there's some good news. So I'm hoping we can end on some good news. And you say that each of us have a choice, and what choice is that?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for the compliment on my TED Talk. So yeah, we do. And this is so easily fixed. The problems that we're facing, these public health problems that are directly or indirectly related to how we treat animals. They're so easily fixed. Just start treating animals like we'd like others to start treating ourselves or you know, to treat us. And it really comes down to that. And one of the most significant things each person can do is choose a different plate of food. You know, don't choose that plate full of meat, eggs, and dairy, but instead choose the plate full of delicious and healthy vegan foods. You know, fruits, vegetables, grains, beans, soy, all those wonderful foods that are natural health life prolongers. They're natural anti-carcinogens. They're wonderful for our own bodies. They'll clear your skin. They'll give you better energy. They'll just improve your individual health. Plus, they will have a huge impact on the number of animals that are raised and killed for food. So reducing the number of animals raised and killed for food, that will help do away with factory farming over time. That will have a significant impact on climate change and the environmental disasters that are a result of animal agriculture, and it will help prevent a major pandemic. So there is so much we can do, all of us, that we can do, and we don't have to wait for our politicians to figure out how to do the best thing. We don't have to wait for other people. We can do it ourselves. We can make this change ourselves.
Now, I should to see the TED Talk and learn more about your book. Where can our listeners go?
Oh, sure. You can go to my website, and it's just my name. You can just Google my name, and you'll come up to my website, and the TED Talk is there as well. So it's Aisha Akhtar. It's A-Y-S-H-A, and Akhtar is A-K-H, as in Harry, T-A-R.
We've been talking with Dr. Aisha Akhtar, a double board certified neurologist, preventative medicine, and public health specialist, and author of the book, Animals and Public Health, Why Treating Animals Better is Critical to Human Welfare. Thanks for being with us, Aisha.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. That was great.
Thank you so much.
Now that it's back to school time and you're thinking about what to put in your or your kids' lunchbox, why not try some healthy plant-based options?
And if you'd like to learn more about a plant-based diet, please go to the Veg Society of El Paso's website at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the many past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button. Until next time, I'm Tom Linney.
I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.